I'll give you one of the most dramatic examples, and then I'm going to let you go for this day since I've dumped so much on you. And tomorrow, we'll start fresh, and I'm going to walk you through the seven master steps and how to make a change with this woman I just described. Because I didn't finish there, obviously. I had to do some things to help her make the shift. I'm giving you the 30,000-foot view. But I'll give you one of the more dramatic examples. I remember I was doing one of my Date with Destiny seminars, which is one of my favorite programs that I do. I take a couple thousand people, and we go for 6 days. You got people from all over the world, usually 40 or 50 countries. We're translating usually 4 or 5 languages simultaneously. And I love it because you never know what's going to happen. Because when you have that many people and you have like, you know, you can have a business executive. And then I've got, let's say, Anthony Hopkins, the actor here. And then I've got a child, a young person here. And I've got somebody that's incredibly challenged and somebody incredibly successful. And it's, you never know what's going to happen. And it's pure magic as we go through and discover our forces of destiny. These people discover what needs are driving them. They discover all the beliefs that are controlling their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, their behaviors. They discover the emotions that are dominant in their life, that are the filters they're experiencing their life from. And then we change it. They shift it consciously. They figure out how to line up their life with their blueprint by changing their blueprint or changing the life or changing both to something that's updated, not some old thought you got from 10 years ago that's still guiding you and making you crazy. We got to update, don't we? So I'm having this experience, and there's a point in these seminars where invariably I'll ask, who here is suicidal? And the room kind of looks. And the reason I do that is because in any room of 2,000 or 3,000 people, no matter how successful they are, there's always a half dozen to a dozen people that are suicidal. And before I got to that point, during one of the stretch breaks, this woman came up to me and she said, oh my God, I need you to read this. This is my partner's book. People have a little notebook that they write their notes in. And she said, I didn't need to read this. I picked it up by accident. I thought it was mine, but look. And the woman's face was ashen. So I didn't know what it was. I open the book. I look at the page. And there is this description of this man, her buddy, who's describing how he's going to kill himself and his children. And the process was laid out in detail. So without going through the gory details, I think you can imagine my state change. I thought, oh my God, I mean, you know, obviously we got to do something. So I said, go ahead and sit down and I'm going to call on him. So I come to, after the break, and I say, who here is suicidal? And then I usually pause and say, I love suicides. Come on, who's out there? Just to break the pattern. And there's this nervous laugh and some people kind of gasp. And I said, the reason is because if you're suicidal, it's clear that you have a set of beliefs and values and rules and emotions and needs that are in conflict at a massive scale, and you're in such pain that you're considering not being here. I don't mean this room. I mean life. And I want to bring somebody in. I want to show how they're wired and then show you how to change it. And I've been doing this for, you know, 30 years. Trust me, I can help. So raise your hand. You can help yourself. Let's do it. And gradually, you'll get one or two hands, and then it becomes safe, and then usually 5, 6, 7, sometimes a dozen hands. And I'll call on these people and I'll ask them to tell me why they're depressed, why they're suicidal. And you hear some amazing stories. And then I usually pick one and make an example. But as I'm doing this, the man's notebook, his name was Bob. And so each person, I say, well, what's your name? No Bob. So I listen to their story and I go to the next. Finally, I've gone through everybody. No Bob. So I finally say, Bob, I read your notebook. Are you out there? Because I didn't know what he looked like. And then I said, come on, Bob. I said, step up. I said, let's deal with this. And gradually, this man about 20 rows back stands up right on the edge of the aisle. And my brain was blown because you know how sometimes you have an expectation. I'm thinking, you know, what kind of person would you picture if someone's going to kill themselves and their own children, for God's sakes? So I don't know what I pictured, but it was pretty vicious. And who stands up is this kind of portly late 40s, early 50s guy with his little paunch, you know, kind of graying beard. And these twinkling little eyes looked very sad, but, you know, if he wasn't so sad, he looked like Santa Claus almost. I mean, it was just, it was amazing. It wasn't what I pictured. I said, are you Bob? He said, yeah. I said, Bob, aren't you suicidal? He said, yeah. I said, Bob, you're not only suicidal, but you got a plan to kill yourself and your kids, don't you? And the whole room, like, it's like, oh my God, you know, everybody knew you could feel it viscerally, and people started looking at this guy like he was the devil, And he kind of like grimaced and said, yeah. I said, Bob, why? Why do you want to kill your kids? Why do you want to kill yourself? He goes, oh, that's a long story. I said, tell me the story. And he started to tell me the story about the fact that, you know, he hasn't worked for 3 years and he's got 5 kids and that he's a total failure in life, and that at this point, he's better off dead, but he loves his kids. What? Yeah, he loves his kids. I don't want to hurt my kids. He said, I take their lives because I wouldn't want to be scarred. I wouldn't want them to live knowing I killed myself and thinking that I did it not caring for them. He said, I know people have been like that. And he said, that's not something a human being should have to bear. So in his model of the world, in his blueprint, he was so worthless. He was completely insignificant. He was not capable of being deserving of love because he had not taken care of his wife and his kids and provided for them. And he was in a position where he had no certainty he could ever make it better in the future. I mean, everything that valued, everything this man needed, he felt like he couldn't meet. So when we're in such pain, he just thought it'd be less pain to be gone. And he didn't want his kids to be scarred, so he was going to take their life. To him, that was logical. Now, clearly, his life conditions don't match his blueprint. So I want to know what his blueprint was. So I said, Bob, I said, do you really want to do this? He goes, no, I don't want to do this. I prayed for an alternative. I said, well, I think there are several. And there was this kind of nervous laugh in the room, you know. And I said, we're going to make sure you get them. You're not leaving here without some alternatives, Bob. He kind of had a little beginning of a little sheepish grin. And I said, play with me on this. I said, tell me what you thought life would be like. I said, have you ever been happy? He said, not in, I don't know, probably a decade. I said, well, tell me what you're like when you're happy. Tell me what you thought life would be about. He said, well, you know, I used to ride a Harley. And the whole audience, I couldn't believe it. Bob rode a Harley? And he looks like this guy you'd never imagine. He goes, yeah, I used to ride a Harley, and I used to raise hell. And all of a sudden, as he does this, as he focuses on those days, focus equals feeling, right? His whole state changes. His body changes. His language changes. He goes, yeah, I was kind of a hellraiser. And, you know, he said, I had so much fun. I mean, life was fun, man. Life was the open road. Life was about freedom, man. You know, every day was new and different. You knew what was going to happen. And he said, my wife was my girlfriend then. And he said, you know, frankly, we used to just do it, man. He said, I used to take her and put her on the pool table and we just go at it. And he said, no, I just love my life. And all of a sudden, Bob looks about, 15, 20 years younger and a different guy. And he's not looking depressed. I said, Bob, are you depressed right now? He goes, no. And he starts to laugh. I said, feel like taking your own life? He goes, no. Just the state change. All of a sudden, he's focusing on things differently. He's coming up a different meaning just in the moment, right? He's starting to feel different. He's starting to, maybe have some different decisions. Now, that's just for the moment. That's not going to change this guy. We got to get into his model of the world. So I dug in a bit more. I said, Bob, tell me something. So what was life about then? He said, well, life was about, having fun and living fully and enjoying yourself and enjoying your woman and being on the open road and freedom. So now we know Bob's model. I said, Bob, so what about now? What changed? He said, well, we got married and we had our first boy and then we had the second and then the third and then the fourth and then the fifth. And I said, do you ride your Harley anymore? He goes, no. He said, no, I haven't ridden it and can't remember when. I said, make love to your wife on the pool table anymore? And he started laughing. I goes, can't remember the last time that happened. I said, what changed? He said, well, I became a father. I had to be responsible. And, I had to, live life differently. And you can't be a father and ride a motorcycle. What if you get hurt? And, I had to get, a different kind of job, because I had to be able to support my kids. And I was, supposed to be a better husband. And, husbands don't go gallivanting around and being crazy. And I don't know. It's just, and as he said all these things, he went right back to that state where he was like death. And you could just see all the energy drain out of his face. I said, Bob, I said, you changed your rules. You changed your map. Bob, what you really wanted? You said you wanted freedom. You wanted to feel alive. And how did you do that? You live this life where you are connected to your wife and to your friends. You're connected in nature. You're connected to your motorcycle. You're doing cool stuff you thought was significant. You had certainty. You controlled your life. You had so much variety in your life. You're grown in different ways. I bet you're contributing in different ways. But I said, now, tell me about your needs. How certain are you about your life that you can make it work? And he goes, what do you mean, how certain? I don't have any certainty. I said, 0 to 10. He goes, minus 10. I said, well, how much positive variety in your life today? He said, well, I don't know, 1 or 2. I said, how significant do you feel as a man? He said, that's why I don't want to be here. What's the number? Minus 100. I said, I'm a failure. And every bit of energy he had a few moments ago that was moving the room had dropped out of his body. Connection and love. He goes, you know, I know my wife's a good woman. I love her, but, you know, I don't feel anymore. Growth contribution, 0-0. It's not hard to figure out why the guys won't be around. I said, here's the problem, Bob. I said, the problem is not your life. I said, your problem is your blueprint. I said, you got to find a way to meet your six needs in a better way. And I said, you really think killing your children, you know, that might protect them from being scarred, but have you ever thought about what that might mean in the hereafter? I said, do you have any religious beliefs? And I'm searching to see if there's a place in him for leverage, you know, a place where there can be a shift, a place where I can make changing a must, not a should, where the change will happen, not because I'm there, but because his own belief systems take over, where the conflict inside of him, he values something more to make him live than to make him die. And I'm not going to tell you how this got resolved. I think you have to go to tomorrow to find it out, because I'll take you through the seven steps then. But I will tell you this, Bob lived, but there's more to the story. But I've gone so long today, I better turn you loose. So how about this? How about we just recap for a second? What have we covered today? Wow, quite a bit. More than we will on most days. This is your introduction, so I hope it's been useful for you. What we've been talking about here is, how do you become an agent of change? How do you be able to make change happen in situations other people would think is impossible? How do you make changes in minutes or hours that most people might take weeks, months, or years to do? And then we've begun to expose you now to the three decisions that shape you. What are you going to focus on? What does it mean? And what are you going to do? By the way, how important are those three decisions for Bob right now? By focusing on the wrong thing, is giving it a negative meaning that he's worthless, has made him feel like he doesn't want to be here, and what he's about to do if we don't intervene is not pretty, to say the least. We've talked about what affects us in the moment is the state we're in. When Bob's in this state where he's remembering being on his Harley and he's focused on that, his physiology changes, his language changes. Bob's a different guy. He'll make a different decision. But Bob goes back to focusing on how he's done nothing, he's failed his kids, his life is terrible, his life is worthless, and his body changes, his emotion changes, and he could make a really terrible decision for himself and others. We've said, though, that changing someone's state in the moment might change them for the moment. If you're going to change them long term, got to change their blueprint, got to change their model of the world, got to find out which of those six needs is driving them, and maybe there needs to be a shift in those, which one they value most. Or maybe we just need to shift the belief systems. The map's outdated. Need some new beliefs or some new rules. Bob clearly needs some new rules. He thinks that the only way he can be worthwhile as a man is to provide a certain income, and since he's not doing that, he's worthless. He's failed to realize the difference he can make with his children just by loving them and being in their presence, regardless of his income or his job. He's missing out on the connection with his wife. By the way, I asked him, I said, Bob, what about your wife? He said, oh, she'll be fine. That's why he's not going to kill her. She'll make it through this. Interestingly enough, we talked about the needs, the six needs, the map, about how to get there. And we've talked a bit about the emotions that guide us. And now we've talked about the formula for happiness. Your life conditions equal your blueprint. The formula for unhappiness, your life conditions do not equal your blueprint. And the formula for suffering. Your life conditions don't equal your blueprint, and you believe you can do nothing to change it. You're helpless. Your three choices, blame, events, people, or yourself, are the only two real choices. Change your life conditions. Change your body. Change your relationship. Do something now, or change your blueprint. And Bob is our first instructional example, which we will continue tomorrow as we walk into the seven master steps of ultimate change, ultimate impact. I hope I've hooked you. I hope you're with me. I promise you that if you'll stick with me for these 10 days, each day, some days will be shorter, some will be a little bit longer, but each day I promise to make sure I bring forward to you some of the best insights that I've found, and that by taking these in, you'll become more impactful as a leader, as a friend, as a parent, as a lover, as a person who really is a force for good, or as I would say, an agent for change. So as you go to turn off this audio session, what I'd like you to do is take one form of action. It's real simple to kind of integrate this. Let's start with you. If we want to influence somebody else, probably useful to influence ourselves. Much harder to influence ourselves than a stranger anyway or someone else. So I'd like you to just to jot down, again, what needs are driving you? What are the top two of the six of certainty, uncertainty, significance, love, and connection, growth, or contribution. Not which one do you value most, which one do you live most operationally. Secondly, I want you to think of an area of life you're really pleased with and lock it in and notice why you're pleased. Why are you pleased? Capture it and notice that it matches your core expectation, at least at a basic level. And then think of an area you're not pleased with and actually jot it down. I'm not pleased in this area and here's why. And then notice how your life conditions don't match your blueprint and then make a decision as the final step. Do I need to change my life conditions? Do I need to start working out instead of complaining about my body? Do I need to shift my relationship? Do I need to focus on something else spiritually or emotionally? What do I need to do? Or do I need to change my blueprint and stop having a ridiculous expectation? Because I'll tell you one thing, most people's blueprint is where the problem is. You know, I've met so many people over the years. I'll give you one last example. My dear friend Anthony Hopkins, and he's somebody who's just, he's not like what you'd see on the silver screen. Yes, he's an unbelievably brilliant actor, but he's one of the most generous, playful, warm human beings you can imagine. And Tony had the experience of going on my date with Destiny, and I'll never forget. He got up on, I think, the fourth or fifth day, and he kept raising his hand, and I was ignoring him because I was making sure security people were around him and nobody would bug him so he could have his own experience. I didn't want anybody to know he was there. It's pretty hard to hide Hannibal Lecter, but we did our best, you know. And he finally raised his hand. He shouted out. He said, "You don't need to protect me anymore." And I said, "Okay, Mr. Hopkins, Sir Anthony." And he smiled, and he said, "I just want to share." And he got up, and he told the story about feeling the greatest joy he'd ever felt. He said, "Because now I understand myself." He said, "I've been knighted by the Queen." He said, "You know, I've had an Academy Award." And he said, "But somewhere inside, I wasn't allowing myself to experience this." Because he said, "I've had this blueprint that's impossible to meet, this blueprint of how I'm going to have to be all the time." And he said, "It's made me unhappy even in some of the best times." And he said, "So this is the greatest gift. This gift of change can happen at the deepest level when you get to the source, when you and I begin to master the invisible forces." That's what the session was the introduction to, and the next few days we're going to go into the mechanics of it. So thanks for your time. It is my privilege to serve you, and I'm looking forward to spending the next few days with you and then finding out about the people that you've touched as a result of your mastery of the 10 master steps of maximum impact. God bless, and live with passion. I'll talk to you tomorrow.